And we can turn it around if we will just keep talking about what's going on behind the scenes. If you watch just the network news or read the paper, although we are seeing more stories that are exposing the truth, but mostly you have to turn to the alternative press and to wonderful radio sites like the Progressive Radio Network to find out the news that's impacting our future in a very direct way. So really thanks to the folks at TRN for making this show possible and all the other ones that really get the truth out. Current TV is doing a good job. MSNBC starting to cover climate change and energy issues. Of course, Current TV is owned by Al Gore, so if they don't see the need to cover climate change, then we really have a problem, because there is new evidence out that public support for steps to curb climate change are actually those numbers are going down in the wrong direction. Apparently, according to research at Stanford University done by John Krosnick, who is going to join us in a couple of weeks, he was not available to be on today's show. He says the majority still favor most tax breaks or restrictions on industry, but they're showing that that is slipping. And, of course, it's slipping mostly among Republicans who get their news from Fox News or talk radio, 95% of which is dominated by right-wing hosts such as Rush Limbaugh, Bill O'Reilly, Sean Hannity, to name a few. So that's why it's so important to really support independent press, and it shouldn't be considered alternative. I say alternative to what, but in this case, when it comes to our environment, climate, and energy issues, alternative to some of the lies that are being put forth by deep-pocketed perpetrators like the Koch brothers. I am very pleased to bring my next guest on, and Kelly is with a group called Ceres. We're going to find out what that acronym stands for. I used to know by heart, but she'll update us. She is co-director for policy program and direct, co-director, policy program, and director for Business for Innovative Climate and Energy Policy. That's a long title, and that is BICEP for short. And Anne, thanks for joining us to give us an update on what American corporations are doing to really improve their stewardship. Ceres stands for what?
Thank you so much, Betsy. It's great to be with you this afternoon. Ceres originally stood for the Coalition for Environmentally Responsible Economies, and because that was such a mouthful, we've actually simply just used the acronym Ceres now. And yes, Ceres is also the Roman goddess of the harvest, but we have just CERES, small cap at this point.
Wonderful. And you have just concluded your annual conference?
We have, and perhaps I should tell your guests, just because it isn't clear from our name, that we are the largest investor coalition in North America. We have an investor network on climate risk that has over 100 investors and holds $10 trillion under management. We don't own any of those assets, but we help to mobilize and organize them around the full portfolio of sustainability challenges. We also have a full corporate network of over 90 companies and a public interest coalition. So those are sort of the three-legged stool of Ceres.
And can you give us some of the highlights of this year's gathering?
Certainly. We had our conference in Boston this year. We had about 600 people come from those three groups that I just mentioned, and we had several terrific plenaries and conversations and workshops, including Lisa Jackson, the EPA administrator, came and brought the house down at the end of the conference, inviting everybody to stay involved and defend EPA's right to regulate, and particularly right to enforce the Clean Air Act. We had a plenary session on water, on the threats to water as an important finite resource. We had further discussions on socially responsible investing, on the need to fully incorporate sustainability from the top down and right through to the supply chain. The name of our conference this year was Igniting Innovation, Scaling Sustainability. So that's really what we're attempting to do. There was also a couple of policy workshops, and that's the area I run the policy shop here at Ceres. We had some very rich discussion about the need for companies to stand up for the very kinds of policies that they're attempting to integrate within their own operations. So really pushing for systemic rule change.
So looking at something you call Sustainalytics, easy for you to say, maybe not me, how are some of the major corporations doing in terms of meeting their own goals on the road to 2020? Corporate progress on the Ceres roadmap for sustainability is the
yes,
title
thank
of,
you.
of the
Thank
report.
Thank you, Beth. I should have mentioned that a couple of years ago we put out the series roadmap to 2020, which includes 20 expectations for companies around governance, disclosure, stakeholder engagement, as well as performance metrics. And having put forth those expectations, which were based on our 20 years of experience working with companies, we decided it was a good time to do a little bit of a check-in, and we looked at 600 companies on the Russell 1000, and we looked at them in various, segmented them by sector, to try to get a sense of where the progress is and where we still have some gaps. And it's very worth going to our website to actually read the full document. There's a lot of information there. And I can't really do it justice to summarize the whole thing, but just a few highlights. I think the good news is that there is progress in several areas, including governance. We push hard for sustainability from the board right down through the supply chain, and we're seeing companies taking sustainability serious at the executive level in the C-suite, establishing sustainable board committees that have responsibilities over sustainability. I guess if I were to, we're also seeing, I think, sustainability being less of about tokenism, less of a differentiator and more of a strategic imperative. So it's closer now to the core of what businesses are about. Long having the ghetto of the EH&S department, as Dan Estee used to say, and so no longer is this about having a couple of compliance people on staff, much more about really thinking in a deep way about sustainability as being core to a corporation's mission. And That takes on many forms, but that philosophical change is one I think that's worth noting. We don't even use the word greenwash anymore with the leadership companies that we work with. That's really very, very old school. And it's not about just checking off the box or putting out some pretty report. Companies have really moved to a much deeper plane. I'd say one of the biggest challenges we found, still a lot of companies that have a long way to go in many sectors, and that the social side of things, we talk about ESG, environmental, social, and governance, and candidly, the social side, the labor side, the human rights issues are not moving forward with the same progress that we have seen on the environmental front.
Okay, before we go forward, I have to stop you. You mentioned greenwashing. Of course, I had a question coming up about that. You say you don't use the term anymore. Is that because the practice doesn't exist so much, or because you want to call it something else? how alive and well is the term we know as greenwashing, which, of course, is just a company trying to make their policies and products and identity appear to be environmentally proactive when, in fact, it's not, and perhaps even the opposite?
Sure. It's still there, certainly, but the digital age has been enormously helpful in this regard in ways that we could not have imagined 20 years ago. You can run, but you can't hide. Companies will often say, gee, no good deed goes unpunished. And we'll say, well, actually, no good deed will go unscrutinized, untweeted, unemailed about. It's going to be looked at carefully. It is very difficult at this point to not put something out before a scrutinizing public and be called out for it. You also may be called out for it by your competitors, by your sector, by your trade association. Consumers are much savvier than they were 20 years ago when Ceres began its efforts. Okay. So, I mean, of course companies, make mistakes. This is where consultants, there's a whole practice around now trying to be environmentally in a sound and credible way. And, we're seeing more of that. We're seeing more of that, and we're seeing less of the sort of, as I say, tokenism, less of the fluff.
Mm. So looking at your report here, the overview, it says about 2 years into this 2020 time frame, still have a long way to go. Just 26% of the 600 companies are integrating sustainability within governance and management systems. Only a quarter are disclosing supply chain monitoring and performance, and a third are setting targets for reducing greenhouse gas emissions. So I guess you conclude that, we have a good start underway, but more companies need to be taking stronger action now.
Exactly. Many more companies need to be much more aggressive, and many of them are in the process, and they're sort of thinking it through. But needless to say, they need to accelerate their efforts, and their investors need to demand that they do so. The investors need to understand that part of a company's value is, in fact, its core values and its sustainability profile. And that's where we all, you know, we have the whole investor coalition attempting to push those messages and those metrics.
Now, I don't know if you've heard any of the first segment, but we were talking about the attacks to discredit the wind power industry. And I know that there's a lot of concern about whether Congress will renew the tax credit, which could really cloud the future of wind power. Recently, I understand 15 major companies are speaking out and asking Congress to support wind power.
Exactly. And that's through the coalition that you mentioned, the acronym being BICEP. Referring to the muscle that we're trying to put behind policy change, referring to businesses for innovative climate and energy policy. Yes, we had 15 major corporations get up and stand behind the production tax credit for wind energy, which is really, if you talk to anyone in the wind industry, it's critically important. And companies are willing to stand up. These were companies that are, and this is an important distinction, they are not wind-producing companies. So they're not part of the manufacturing of wind turbines in any way, shape, or form, or the sale of wind power. These are companies on the demand side. So they're looking to purchase renewables, companies like Starbucks and Staples that are within the top 10 wind power purchasers in the country, standing up and saying, this is a viable resource. We would like it to be remain available because this is part of what will usher us into the clean energy economy. So yes, they have been advocates in that regard. And I did hear with some dismay, we too read about the pending attacks on wind energy and renewables, and that's highly unfortunate, but not to be unexpected when you're making rapid change. We've seen before in history when change occurs, those who benefit from the status quo are going to rebel. And so I grew up in Detroit, and the buggy whip manufacturer analogy applies. People didn't want to see the horseless carriage come either. So those who are entrenched and benefiting from the fossil fuel economy are certainly going to be those who are going to reject the alternatives. So all I'm saying is that it's predictable, though highly unfortunate, and I don't think will be ultimately successful.
And, of course, businesses have always tried to influence legislation, but I guess what's new now is that enough companies, well, not enough perhaps, but hopefully a growing critical mass of companies are really saying that sustainability goals are not only good for the environment, they're good for business. And we need to, you know, be able to plan for the future and invest in clean energy. If you can comment on that, and then I just have a couple of questions about, who's leading the way here? It seems like I'm seeing a lot of familiar names that I saw, back 10 years ago when I covered all these conferences, Ceres and BSR, talking about Stonyfield, Timberland, Starbucks, Nike. Wondering if there's any new big players emerging.
Yes, well, I'll answer your first question first, and then you're asking a really great question about the new players, the new kids on the block, and there are some new names. The first question you asked is really about company. You're right. Companies have forever been active lobbyists, for sure. They have lobbied for business interests. We know this. This is part of, participatory democracy works when people participate, so fair enough. I guess what's different is to see although, again, you'd have to sort of look back through the legislative history. And just to be fully accurate, it's 2012, 40 years ago, we passed the Clean Water Act in this country in 1972. One of the reasons we were able to get a federal statute, both for clean air and clean water, is because we had a patchwork of systems from state to state. And, in fact, the businesses stood up, many manufacturers stood up and said, well, wait a second, this isn't actually helpful. We don't want to have to conform to 18 different systems. It would be much easier if we had a federal model that set a certain baseline standard. And then states, if they wished, could potentially be more stringent. But let's have a baseline standard. So, actually, business voice in the environmental infrastructure of our laws is not new. I think what's interesting and new, especially in the current era, is to see businesses standing up for specifically for energy efficiency, for the clean energy economy, and for the federal government to really grapple with the challenge of climate change, really embracing the science of climate change, embracing the anthropogenic causes of climate change, understanding that humans are contributing to it, and really saying, you know, we got to do something about this. And for many, many reasons, because they have supply chains that are vulnerable. They have cotton, they have leather, they have coffee, they have cocoa, they have any number of resources that they are dependent upon for their businesses. Critically important, they have workers in the supply chain. Equally important, they have legacies, they have grandchildren. So they've got skin in the game in a variety of complex ways. They also, as you point out, have done the numbers. And they have figured out, many of them, that being more efficient with natural resource use, being more efficient with energy, is simply going to save them money. And diversifying their energy portfolio is a hedge against future rising energy costs. It just makes sense. So many of them are on the Hill regularly with us, making the business case in a very compelling way in terms of their own operations. They have seen the benefits of energy efficiency, and they're willing to make the case before federal and state policymakers. In terms of the new kids on the block, you know, who's leading this charge, there are too many companies to mention, so I'm only going to highlight a few. But, you know, you're asking sort of a deeper question. Who is sustainable in terms of their practices? And you mentioned Stonyfield and, you know, Ben & Jerry's and some of the companies, Timberland, that we would expect to be clean and green as part of their brand. I would point out Starbucks, however, that hasn't been around, you know, wasn't necessarily out when you're referring to some of those first green companies. Then there's a company that has been around for a while, Levi Strauss, that has just done unbelievable things when it comes to looking at their product, looking at their footprint, and advocating for the right policy. Levi's, you may know, piloted the waterless jeans last year, so they can yes. make blue jeans, you know, with much less water, much less energy. eBay is a really interesting example. Now, all the IT companies, of course, are major power users. So it's really important to look at what they're doing and where are they being innovative. I would just take the example of eBay because they cited a major data center in Utah, and of course, Utah is a place that has a very stable climate. Lots of people like to site there. Energy is very cheap. It is all coal-based. They wanted to diversify their power source in Utah and were unable to do so. So anyone who's interested, by the way, could just Google eBay and Utah and clean energy, and they would get this story. They essentially work with the state legislature and a Republican state legislator to make it easier for companies to set up power purchase agreements with renewable sources. And they actually passed that state law this past year. And before too long, they had solar panels on their data center. So that's a really interesting model of walking the talk, not only trying to create sustainability within your own operation, but actually they brought together a number of companies to form a coalition to push through this state legislation that's going to have some terrific long-term effects.
Well, you mentioned companies that are in my own backyard, in fact, where I grew up in Silicon Valley. Levi's, of course, Levi Strauss is a San Francisco-based company, and eBay, of course, in Silicon Valley, and Google and Facebook are also on the greener side. We do seem to have a lot of pioneering going on here, and yet I would say not nearly enough in terms of even public awareness. I talk about that a lot on my show, how fellow moms in you know, pretty progressive Marin County are still not talking about these issues that certainly will impact their children and beyond. So there are some new players. Glad to see that. I got tired. Ray Anderson, may he not be resting in too much peace, because he was, of course, the guy who woke up industry to their impact on our environment. Passed away last year, but he was always speaking at these conferences I would go to, and he was so inspiring, and I still cried every time he read Tomorrow's Child at the end of his talk. But I said, where are the next Ray Andersons and Gary Hirschbergs? And I hope they're emerging, and especially, you know, I guess in the high-tech field, where they certainly have plenty of money to invest in, not only, you know, having electric cars on the Google campus, but also, and solar panels, but also perhaps some outreach. That's my area of you know, frustration, is that, you know, billions have gone into clean tech. Not $1, as far as I know, has gone into supporting independent green media when this is, you know, the biggest story of our times. And, you know, some of us have been covering this for a while, but, again, not too wide enough audiences.
No, you're exactly right, and you're asking exactly the right question about where are the next Ray Andersons and Jeffrey Schwartz and Gary Hirschbergs, and I believe that they're there. I mean, one of the on the positive side, I would just point to the generational change that we're seeing, young people consistently, and I'm looking for a study on this, but I keep hearing it anecdotally, and from students that I teach and that come to series, are continually looking for a company that's engaged in sustainable practices. I mean, it really is on the tip of their tongue. They don't doubt the existence of climate change. They get it. They understand there has to be change. And so I really look with a tremendous amount of hope to that generation. And I think it's no accident that the newer, younger companies, the IT sector in particular, Hewlett Packard and Dell, and even those in the sector that are older companies like an IBM, are the ones who are innovating and trying to create a green grid and really trying to figure out the most efficient use of resources. But your point's well taken. We should not in any way, shape, or form rest on our laurels. There is a tremendous amount of work to be done, and we certainly feel a high sense of urgency about that work.
What about your ability, your being serious, ability to impact, you know, mutual funds, people who want to invest in, you know, sustainable companies? The Microsoft example being a recent case of there being, you know, information revealed that they were supporting the Heartland Institute.
Yeah, exactly. Again, and the reason that we all know this, I have to thank God for the digital age. I think that there's a tremendous opportunity for consumers of Microsoft products, for Microsoft investors, for Microsoft admirers, for Microsoft Facebook followers, to simply tell the company, this will not do. I mean, this is not acceptable. And I have no doubt that the company has received lots of complaints once word got out about their contribution to the Heartland Institute. I mean, it's really interesting, if we, as a case study, what's just happened in the last few days with some of the choices that Heartland made and some of the withdrawals from their membership of State Farm and others. So, again, it's very difficult for companies to hide, and I think we, you know, consumers and investors, need to be engaged. And we need to be engaged in the companies from whom we buy our products, for the places in which we invest. And there has never been an easier moment to simply get the information that you need. You know, years ago, you had to, when I was doing criminal enforcement, you had to subpoena everything, and it was just hard to get a shred of accurate information from anyone about anything. And that's all changed. So there's really no excuse for folks not supporting institutions that they believe in, and for telling reputable companies like Microsoft, which is a superb company, you know, what is and is not acceptable. And if a company is involved in a trade association of any kind that someone finds unacceptable, you ought to let them know. You ought to let them know quickly. And I see consumers doing that all the time.
And Kelly Perfect, because the song in the background that the volume is going up on is We Can Turn It Around. So if we can tune in to what's going on and stay actively informed and speak out, I think we might have a chance. Thanks so much, Ann Kelly with Series, for bringing us up to date on what corporate America is doing and still not doing enough of on the Green Front. And this is The Green Front. Find archives at my website, thegreenfront.com. Till next time, have a great green week.